So I'm here in the studio with Jerry Hughes, Chief Executive of GVA, and we're here to talk, of course, about the gender pay gap. Jerry, you and GVA filed. It was a number that surprised me, to be honest, because I know that GVA are really hot on diversity, and you yourself, a real champion of women in the business. Were you surprised by your number?
Yes, you're right. I have been vocal on this issue, and in fact, I'll continue to be very vocal on the matter because it's such an important issue for industry. Was I surprised by our numbers? No, because we as a business are on a journey, and we're moving from an old school partnership culture, if I can call it that, to the creation of a much more modern, dynamic, progressive a business, and that takes time. I think there's no quick fix for this issue, and we're trying to do everything we can as quickly as we can, but it's going to take time.
And tell us a little bit about that journey, what it looks like, and what the ambition is.
Well, as a business, we actually have parity on pay, level for level. So the issue for us is primarily twofold. One, getting more women into our business, in fact, into the industry full stop. And secondly, then creating the circumstances for those women with the talent and the ability to progress to senior positions and take on leadership roles in the organisation. So where we started, because I personally am not necessarily a fan of quotas per se, we have started very much at focusing on getting more women into the industry and more women into our business at the bottom in many instances. So we focus very heavily on working with schools, working with different universities, working with colleges, sending out ambassadors, identifying female role models that can speak on behalf of the company. And I think this year we are seeing a massive difference. We had 50 times the applicants for graduate places at GVA, which was an amazing achievement, frankly. Two-thirds of those were male and one-third were female. And through the process, we've achieved parity, female-male, in terms of graduate intake. So we're starting to make some inroads. That's the first thing. But then we're now looking also very closely at how we create the circumstances for women to progress through the business. And that, at its heart, is about creating the right culture in the business. It's about creating the right environment for people who are recognised for their talent, for their abilities, rather than for their gender, or indeed even for their socioeconomic or ethnic background. That takes time. Mm. That's addressing some inbuilt bias in our business that we're working very hard to address.
So just jumping back to the graduate intake, it's really interesting to see that even though there were fewer women, you were able to achieve parity. That tells me that the women were better. But that's only me saying that as a woman, of course. But also mildly upsetting that it was two-thirds guys, one-third women that came, put themselves forward. Do we have, and you said you're working with schools there. Is there... even more work that needs to be done that before that graduate level for women to see this as a career for them?
I think this is the root of the issue, it's a principal issue, if not the principal issue, in the sense that there tends to be a process or a conveyor belt that brings people into our industry, whether that be through families, through structures, through networks, through particular schools, through particular universities. And I think if we're going to change the dynamic of our industry, we have to broaden the net to capture more people from different backgrounds. This is not just a gender issue. Mm-hmm. This is a socioeconomic and ethnic issue as well. Attract people with talent from every part of our society. And that requires every player in the industry, and I think particularly the RICS, to work much more closely with schools to make surveying a career of choice for people from different backgrounds and for women. And I did want to draw one comparison, actually. We did an internal analysis across our planning teams. We've got a very strong planning business. And without saying what the gender pay gap is for our planning teams, it is significantly higher than it is for our surveying teams. And that reflects that there is more women coming into planning and there are more women in our organisation progressing through our business. So it turns the spotlight even more on the surveying profession. The surveying profession when you look at it from that perspective.
That's an interesting point. We were having a chat with Kieran Bird from CBRE, and he was saying that this isn't about gender pay gap, this is a gender role problem, and something that we have particularly in brokerage, where, and you've mentioned this, the C word as well, the culture word, that it's just that at the moment isn't a culture where women, or a lot of women, will feel particularly comfortable, because it's, you know, it's a bit of a boys' club, and it has that sort of view at the moment. Is that something you would agree with, and do you think that is a culture that we can change?
I totally agree with it. You've heard me use the word culture. You've heard me talk about changing the culture of our industry, and that's something I completely and passionately believe in. The alpha male boys club type culture that people refer to, you know, manifests itself in a whole series of different ways. At its worst, recently in the press coverage, but it exists, and it exists in a way that makes it often difficult for women to feel comfortable. There's no doubt about this. We have got to remove that type of culture, and that's something I'm focusing on totally at GVA, to make sure that no matter what background people come from, no matter what gender they are, no matter what their ethnic background is, they feel comfortable working at GVA, because we're a business that respects their abilities as an individual and their potential to grow and grow our business. But I go back to what I said a few moments ago, that takes a little bit of time, because that culture is embedded in our industry. And until you move some of those people who've been in the industry for a very long time holding particular views, until you move those people on, or they move on, it's going to be very difficult to change.
And you talked about people feeling comfortable within GVA. What does comfortable look like? What are the sort of practical things that you're doing to enable everyone, not just women, to feel comfortable in their position and able to do their jobs?
We're increasingly putting the emphasis on merit, on people being in an organisation where they can feel that they can be authentic, they can be themselves. We are creating a culture whereby there is every opportunity to communicate sideways and upwards to the top, where people feel that they're listened to. We're creating forums for that to happen. That's not just rhetoric. We are creating forums at every level of our business where people can communicate across the business with their peers, and also up through the business with their seniors. We're creating a culture where women in the business who are in positions of seniority are engaging right down through the business to ensure that younger women feel that they can make progress through the organisation. So in a nutshell, it's about creating a business where the most important thing is your talent, your ambition, and your ability to progress. And I think working in an environment where people are able to be authentic and be themselves is a much more creative, interesting environment than one where people are pretending to be something they're actually not.
You obviously have the wonderful Rosgood, who is one of those senior women who I've certainly spoken to a lot, who is a great champion of, you know, you can have it all and still progress up the career ladder. What are the, I guess maybe I should ask her, but she's not here. What are the real tips and advice that you'd give to an individual? Like, is there opportunity for flexible working? Do you offer shared parental leave? And how important is it that those options are seen as an option for the men as well as for the women? You know, if a guy wants to work 3 days a week because he wants to look after the kids or whatever, then that's okay too.
You're absolutely right. We have to put practical measures in place that makes it more con conducive for women to stay and work and build a career. That means that, and we're doing this, you know, much more agile working. All our offices are agile working, so people can be much more flexible in how they work. We're introducing, we have introduced flexible working arrangements, and we're encouraging people to work from home where it's appropriate for them to do so. I have to say that there's a cultural change required there. Mm. I mean, some of our senior individuals might not look at that favorably. That's because they've been used to be working in a particular way. I think one area, I'll be really honest here, one area where we've not actually cracked this yet is on the maternity cover and paternity cover. We have been slow at addressing that, and that's something that's now right at the top of my agenda to address this year, to get us to a position where we have really attractive maternity and paternity cover arrangements. It's not in place yet. It's frustrated me, but it will be this year.
And you know, I don't think you're alone in that. The shared parental leave, the take up within our industry is tiny, isn't it? I think, and globally, I'm pretty sure I heard a stat that was said it was 2%, which is rotten. I think you know you're right in that changing that culture where people understand that this is an option open to everyone. It is going to take time. It isn't going to happen overnight. And the fact that, you know, people like yourselves and your competitors out there are all saying, we are looking at this. We can't click our fingers and it be sorted. But having to report gender pay gap and actually put this out there and show people the numbers, and maybe some of us will feel a bit embarrassed by it. But that's not a bad thing at all.
It's not a bad thing. In fact, you use the word embarrassed. I actually shared a platform on this topic with some Scandinavian colleagues. That was when I was embarrassed. Mm. When they started to talk about how they deal with this issue, how they deal with maternity and paternity cover, they're light years ahead of us culturally on this front. And I was certainly embarrassed that evening by what we were doing as a nation.
Were you educated as well?
I was educated. Well, of course. And this is absolutely, that's another great word. We all have to be educated. We all have degrees of unconscious bias coming from our background. So we all have to be open-minded and be ready to accept other people's perspectives on some of these issues. I think I used the phrase earlier today. I think this is a Rubicon moment for the industry, because we have now crossed that Rubicon. There's no going back. The stats have been published. They'll be used for comparison purposes. If businesses do not make progress against the base position which has now been set, they will be held to account. The leadership will be held to account, and that's only a good thing. And a degree of peer competition is also quite a good thing.
Mm. And I guess I hadn't really thought about it until you were saying there would be used for some comparisons. It'll also be used for, you know, attracting and retaining talent, I suppose.
Totally. And we're in the game of competing for the best talent. My starting point in this, though, is I step, I don't know if you've heard me talk about this before, I step back and look at this at a much broader footing in terms of our industry. I think the industry has to change in a whole range of fronts, not just on this issue of gender or an issue of diversity, but on many other fronts, and its adoption and adaptation of technology, for example, on its responses to flexible living, flexible working. The range of change that this industry has to go through is phenomenal, and it's been incredibly slow. This is just one other factor that the industry has to wake up and smell the coffee on and really make rapid change. And I think once you start getting people from different backgrounds coming into real estate, the pace of change and some of those other things will happen. I also think there's more room in this industry for people from different professional backgrounds. So we tend to think about real estate being the domain primarily of surveyors, occasionally planners, and occasionally a few other professional disciplines. But I see a change where we're now focusing on attracting creative people, regardless of where their background might sit, training them internally and giving them the opportunity to bring their talents to bear in providing advice to our clients. I think you will see a change in the type of people that are coming into our industry, and that'll pick up pace over the coming over the coming years?
I guess, yeah, as real estate evolves and we start to use technology more, data more, you know, you need data scientists maybe more than you need surveyors at the moment, and hopefully that will broaden make the industry more diverse.
Totally. Technologically, people with those type of skills, but I also think people with more creative skills. If you think of technology doing the more mundane tasks, the people who are creative and able to interpret information and give creative advice are going to be the ones that are more sought after. Mm. People who simply perform tasks are not going to be as much needed in our industry. And this is a wake-up call for the RICS as well, as the institution at the forefront of the surveying industry. There's a lot is expected of them to adjust how they address not just this gender issue, but the changes the industry is facing as a whole.
You're not the first to mention the RICS and the need for them to step up. What do you think they should do? Should they be talking to government to make sure that property is talked about in schools, or should they be much more vocal than they are? Should they be putting stricter targets on the industry? What should they be doing?
All of those things. And in fact, the things that I talked about earlier in this conversation about getting into schools, establishing the relationships with head teachers, identifying role models in the industry that can be inspirational for younger people to come into our sector, opening up every channel they can to get people from different backgrounds. If I was to say to the RICS that if there's one thing that you should be doing more over anything else, it is that. Because that, over a 5 to 10 year period, will bring a seismic change to the industry. But all the issues we've talked about, the RICS has to really step up and lead from the front.
And what about the industry as a whole? I know in your report on the gender pay gap, you talk about collaboration, and you know this isn't a problem that you can solve on your own. This needs everyone to get together and think about the best way to promote an industry where the culture is changing.
Totally. It's really for us as leaders. It's a leadership point. We have to, as leaders, act collectively to address this, put pressure on the RICS, share best practice, and increasingly I see us doing that, actually. I'm not convinced, though, that setting quotas or introducing gender-biased recruitment policies is really the heart of the answer, because you're simply pushing the problem across from one business to the next. But I think I'm seeing greater collaboration across certainly the advisory sector on this issue. And organisations like the British Property Federation are really to the fore as well.
Hmm. And we've talked about how the gender gap at graduate level is pretty much 50-50 there. And we've talked about how you're encouraging women to stay and move up the career ladder and to get into those senior roles. But there is really stark, isn't it, the differences. I know we've been doing some data representations here at EG, and you can flip between upper quartile men and women, and it's quite shocking. I just wonder whether you really think that we can fix that problem. We've obviously had Theresa May reckoning she can fix it overnight, which is, I won't swear, but we all know that's rubbish, don't we? But you know, bless her for saying it. I almost want to say, how long do you think it will take? But I know that's an impossible question to answer. But from you talking to the women in your business who are in those lower level roles now, but that you talk to and I'm sure have ambition, what's the message you give to them, and how are you encouraging them on a personal level, maybe, to just stick at it and show them that they have every opportunity as the next person to them?
That's a great question.
It was a long one, sorry.
It's a long question, but it's a great question, because it allows me to say a couple of things. One, totally not a quick fix, and I'm not a fan of quick fixes. This is a systemic problem that requires a medium to longer term series of initiatives to address the core problem. That's the first thing. If we try to, sorry, I'll add to that. If we try to fix it too quickly, we could do more damage than good initially. So we need to be quite careful. The second thing I'll say is there's a real expectation on me as a white male, as a CEO in a big organization, to take a stand on this issue, because you do get listened to, okay? And I want to become a role model for not just, you know, the men in organizations, but the women as well. And when we released our data and when we released our internal communication on this, the number of contacts I had and phone calls and emails from women in our organization at associate and at junior director level was really humbling, who saying two things. One, thank you for being so open and honest about this. Secondly, I have this particular issue that I'm concerned about. What can you do about it? Okay. And I thought that was great that they were contacting me to speak specifically about an issue that they felt that needed to be addressed. And the more we open up and have those communication and be open about the issues that women face, and then I'll broaden it out, people from different backgrounds might face, the quicker we're going to make change happen.
And that, I mean, that is an added benefit, isn't it, being forced to release these figures, that, you know, if that hadn't happened, you might not know those concerns that those women had, because they might not have thought they had a platform to come to you.
Totally agree. And that's why this is a good thing. It's painful,
yeah,
to see the stats published for everyone to look at. But it's a good thing. Ultimately, it will be the start of a massive difference. The other thing I'll say, going back to the question about pace of change, I think you will find that it'll be slow to start with, and then it will really accelerate, particularly as more women come through, as more people come from different backgrounds, come into our industry, the pace by which we will see us getting to a point of parity, the point at which we see many, many more senior women in senior positions, the pace will pick up rapidly.
And this is going to be probably quite a controversial question, but you've talked about not being a fan of quotas. I'm also not a fan of quotas. So the controversial question is, are we in danger at the moment, with so much focus on championing women and pushing women up in businesses and, you know, President's Club stuff, are we in danger of pushing down the men and forgetting that actually jobs and senior jobs go to people who have the best skill to deliver that job?
This is where I am. We're about creating an environment where the most important thing that matters is an individual's ability, their talent, the creativity, whatever skill it is we're looking for as an organisation. We allow those people to join us, we encourage them to join us, we make them feel wanted, and we give them every opportunity to progress in their career. In that sense, this is not a male-female thing, but equally, we clearly have an issue. So we shouldn't use that to shroud the fact that we have an issue. So I don't use quotas, but I do like to have, an aiming point or a target that we're aiming for that we can measure our progress against. So we will be monitoring our numbers on a quarterly basis and reporting those back to our management team. This is the progress we've made. Mm. So we're setting ourselves targets to be achieved. That's not the same as setting quotas. And if we don't do that, there is a real risk that we take our eye off the ball and think we're doing okay, whereas we might not be doing okay.
Excellent. And you're a father to some daughters, aren't you?
Three
daughters. Poor you. Or maybe lucky you, I don't know. Would you recommend real estate to them?
I would. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you always have done?
I would always have done, but I would have expected them to be more likely to come into real estate in the way that I did, through planning.
Mm.
And that would have been a much more obvious route for them to take. As it happens, none of them are coming into real estate. They've all gone into medicine or more creative industry. So That was their
property's
choice.
Property's loss, obviously.
Absolutely. I'm pleased you said that. That's what I think every day as well. But no, I think if they had come into real estate knowing what I know now, the route they may have taken would have been through the planning route. It would have been more difficult for them to come through surveying.
And do you hope that that message changes if they have daughters and they see this industry in, let's say, another 20 years' time, 30 years' time, that they say, well, of course you can go and be a, maybe there won't be brokers left, actually, who knows with AI. but if they saw that surveying community say, well, you know, why not go into that? You know, it's not, I've heard these rumours that it was once a boys network, but...
I think, this is a phenomenally interesting and stimulating industry. I actually think that in 10 years' time, it'll be even more the case that it's a stimulating, creative industry that'll be attractive to people from a whole range of backgrounds. It'll be a much more open industry. And I think the old boys' cultures, people keep referring to it as, will have gone by then. If it hasn't gone by then, we will have failed, actually. And I don't like failing.
You and I both. Let's leave a parting gift to our listeners. So you have some internal targets that you're going to be hitting. What would you hope to see if we sit here again next year? Where would you hope to have your numbers, or what wins would you like to sit here and talk to us about?
I'm not going to publicly say what our target's going to be for next year, but what I will say is that I want to be able to say that when I speak to you next year, these are the five or six things that we have really put in place that would make a real difference, okay? And at top of my agenda is the maternity paternity issue to address in our organisation. But five or six things that I know will absolutely have made a difference.
Excellent. Jerry, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thank you.